Hello there and welcome to episode number 275 of the Wednesday Conversation Podcast. I am Mike Resnick and I'm here as always with Bob Thune, pastor of Cormdale Church, and Chris Hemmelman, pastor of First City Church. Every Wednesday we sit down and talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today we're talking about the top three books Bob read on sabbatical.
And I'm going to answer that question like a politician and talk about five or six books in the top three, because it's fun to figure out how can I pack more things in there than you're actually asking me.
Or like a pastor in a 3-point sermon who has three subpoints.
Yeah. Not actually 9 points.
Right.
So here's the three books: Augustine, The City of God, Dick Kuy's Seeing Through Cynicism. And actually, if I had to pick the third book, it would be The Patient Ferment of the Early Church. But we're going to do a whole podcast to that next week. So I'm going to bracket that one for next week. And in its place, two books by Tom Holland, Rubicon and Dominion. And so I'm anxious to introduce you to all three of those books, or all four of those books. As you notice, I just put two in there at the end. And just talk about why I found them interesting, and hopefully put them on people's list to read and think about.
So, City of God, abridged or unabridged version?
I went with unabridged. I have both on my shelf, and I had this moment when I was leaving for sabbatical. I was like, which one of these do I want to take? And I just decided to go all in, the unabridged, full scale, all 22 books, or whatever there are, 23.
Man, that's quite an undertaking. I didn't read the whole thing, but I read good chunks of it for my grad school thesis. And it's an interesting read because it is probably one of the most brilliant theologians in church history, addressing a culture that can feel very far removed from us, but at the same time, a lot of his insights and how he just think about history still very much resonate with today. So I wonder what were some of the
Let me just say, if you're interested in Augustine, start with the abridged version or start with Confessions. I mean, you've read that, Mike. It's a good intro to him.
Yep.
If you're going to read City of God, I would start with the abridged version, because the unabridged one is, it goes on some sort of tangents that relate to the Roman world he lived in. You don't necessarily need to go on those tangents to understand his main point. But basically the reason the book interested me is this. I'm convinced we're living at sort of an inflection point in Western cultural history. I don't know what the future is going to hold, but it just feels like lots of things right now are sort of in upheaval about the cultural consensus that has guided us through the last few hundred years. That's the same kind of moment Augustine is writing at. Mm-hmm. He's writing when the Roman Empire is kind of falling apart. And what's happening is the Christians were being blamed for the fall of Rome. When Rome fell, of course, Rome is a polytheistic society, and there was a bunch of blame cast on the Christians, because since you guys worship Jesus instead of all the Roman gods, the gods are angry with us, and that's why the empire has fallen. So Augustine is writing the City of God to answer that charge, to basically say, here's why that's not true. So I wanted to read him as an apologist to see how did he speak to that accusation in the culture, but also as a leader, figuring out how is he trying to lead the church through this cultural shift from where the Roman Empire has been at the center of culture to where the Roman Empire is like disintegrating before their eyes. How is he trying to shape for the people of God a sense of how to be stable in that moment? And of course, what he does is he basically gives them a Christian version of history.
Yeah.
And what he says is, hey, the City of God was never Rome. Rome is here today, gone tomorrow. The City of God is enduring. And so he's trying to anchor Christians in something bigger than their cultural moment and what they know of the world, and ground them in a bigger story. And at the same time, what he does with the Romans is really fascinating, because it's he goes on these rants about, like, okay, so you're saying it's the Christians who are, you know, it's the Christians' fault that Rome has fallen. Well, he's a good enough historian that he's read all the Roman authors who have written before the time of Jesus Christ. So he just goes back and quotes Tacitus, and he quotes Pliny, and he quotes all these Roman authors, and says basically, hey, these guys all were saying the Roman Empire was in shambles before Jesus even came on the scene. So if what you're saying is true, why were these guys in 200 BC talking about how decadent the Roman society was and how it was falling apart? And so it's really profound to see what he's doing with his knowledge of the world he lived in, and the precise ability he had to sort of hear a charge and answer it, not with, no, it's not our fault, but with, hey, let me quote back to your own authors and your own thinkers and talk about how they've assessed your world and show you that actually Christians can't possibly have anything to do with the fall of the empire, because the empire was in shambles before Jesus even came on the scene.
Mm. So what do you think are the most relevant insights for, you know, our cultural moment? You see inflection points. Are there any particular things you're like, hey, this really feels like it could apply well for Christians?
Yes, two things. One, I think we have got to embrace a Christian vision of history. And I think going back to Augustine's whole idea of the city of God is really crucial for us to recapture. Because what I see in American Christianity is a lot of fretting and a lot of anxiety. And the reason people are so animated about politics is because we feel like we have to hold on to the thing we have here, whether we're talking about is like Christendom or even whether it's just like sort of what America has come to represent. There just seems to me to be like this deep, tight-fisted anxiety and fretting in the church. And Augustine's just really freeing when he just talks about like, hey, look, cultures are going to come and go. Leaders are going to come and go. Cultural movements are going to come and go. Wars are going to come and go. Famines are going to come and go. The city of God's always enduring and always out in front of us. And you're a citizen of it if you belong to Jesus Christ. And so that settled sense of a Christian view of history, I think, is really compelling, because it reduces all of that clutter about the ways I'm trying to hang on to what's happening right now or the things that my parents or grandparents experienced. You know, some of that stuff you just realize, oh, that's transient. You know, cultures have always come and gone. The second thing that I found really helpful, Chris, was just his emphasis on love. And James K. Smith has pointed this out in his writing on Augustine, just that Augustine is not interested in what you think about God. He's interested in, do you love God? Mm-hmm. And he even says these two cities are formed by two loves. You either love the world or you love God. It's the same thing 1 John says in chapter 2. And so Augustine really squarely puts the focus on making us ask the question, what do I love? And it seems to me like that question needs to be the question for the renewal of the church. If the church is going to be renewed, we got to stop worrying about what do I believe? What do I think? What doctrinal positions do I espouse? And ask the question, what do I love? Do I really love God? Do I mm-hmm. love Christ? Or do I love the world?
Yeah. And which city do you love?
Yeah. Exactly. There's I kept notes of just a ton of brilliant quotes and ways. Augustine is an absolutely top-notch thinker, and he's fun to read. So I can't possibly do him justice in a little bit of time, but I found this was a really great exercise for me as a leader to think about how do I lead God's people in the midst of a similar cultural mm-hmm. transition.
So, kind of tangentially, what translation did you use? Did you like it?
Hang on. Chris, it's the Marcus Dodds translation from the end of the 19th century with an introduction by Thomas Merton.
Give me some of that Thomas Merton. That's a shout out to you, Dr. Gary Nebaker.
That's right. So that was the first book. Really, really fun for me to read and engage. The second one is Seeing Through Cynicism, which I mentioned last week. I also wrote a blog post summarizing that book at bobathune.com. But that book, if you struggle in any way with cynicism, it's the most helpful book I've ever read on that topic. And again, because Dick Kies, the author, is so well-versed in that territory and so nuanced in how he walks you through both the redemptive side of cynicism and the destructive side of cynicism. So it's profoundly good. And again, that one for me was just personally transformative because of the way he helped me process through my own struggles with cynicism. It's a fantastic book. In fact, I've thought about trying to get Dick Kies to come to Corbindale and preach sometime in the next few years, just because it'd be really fun to hear from him and learn from him. And then I mentioned these two books by Tom Holland. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Tom Holland. He's a British radio personality, scholar, writer. He does a lot of, he's like an intellectual. He's like your classic Renaissance man intellectual. But he wrote, so here's what happened. Before I went on my sabbatical, I was on some website somewhere. I think I was trying to figure out which translation of Augustine I should read. I was on some geeky website somewhere where people were talking about like, it helps if you have some, I think someone was saying it helps if you have some understanding of the Roman Empire at that time, because Augustine is talking a lot about these Roman gods. And if you're not familiar with the world he's living in, you'll be a little lost. And there's a footnote where they said, hey, the best book to read is Tom Holland's book, Rubicon, because it's a treatment of Roman history. It's about the fall of the Roman Republic. So it's a transition from Roman Republic into the sort of Imperial Rome. But it's written like a novel. It's written like he's a historian, but he writes as though you're reading like this ongoing, fast-paced story. And so it doesn't read like a book of dry history. So I checked this book, Rubicon, out from the library and loved it. I mean, it taught me a ton that I didn't understand about sort of like what Rome was like in the time of Jesus. And like, it even helps you understand things like, why are there these various sort of factions within the Jewish people? Why was Caesar particularly a difficult person for every Roman to engage with? Like, so you had the cult of Caesar where you're supposed to call Caesar God. Did they really think Caesar was divine? No, not really. But this is what Rome had, the place where Rome had gotten itself was when they sort of did away with the Republic and gave authority to one person, they also gave up their ability to restrain that one person's pursuit of their own glory and fame. And so this is kind of the trade-off that the Roman people had made, is like, if you'll protect us and be our leader, then we'll defer to you and honor you in whatever ways you want. So it was a fascinating read and really helpful for me, again, just to understand the background of what's happening in sort of, you know, the end of the Republic is what, Chris, 63 BC or something like that, with the rise of Caesar, sometime around there. I might be getting my dates slightly off, but it's basically the first century BC is when Rome transitions from a republic, which is run by the Senate, to a dictatorship essentially under Caesar, and later under Octavian and Caesar Augustus and these. Which is funny because like there's all these guys, their names always change because like it's Octavian, but then when he becomes Caesar, he changes his name to Caesar Augustus because he's the highest, most important Caesar. And it's like all these ways of trying to outdo his predecessors and be more glorious. And that got me into Tom Holland's book, which just came out last year, called Dominion. This book, I think, is a really important book for Christians who care about being able to speak intelligently to those who are knocking Western civilization and sort of trying to undo the Western cultural heritage intellectually. There's a lot of that right now. People are very into like, you know, is there a white man's canon? Is the sort of history of Western European civilization inherently racist? Should we throw it all out? Those are sometimes good questions to ask, but what Tom Holland does in Dominion, the subtitle of the book is the Making of the Western Mind. And what he does is he basically says, in the intro of the book, he says, look, I grew up going to church. It was never that meaningful to me. And for most of my life, I was sort of like a soft agnostic. Then I came to realize that these values that I inherently held as just a Western liberal actually had their roots in Christianity. He says, actually, the more I studied the Roman Empire and wrote about the Roman Empire, the more I realized here's the things Rome valued. Blood, war, power, lust, like these things were unrestrained in the Roman Empire. They gloried in these things. And yet, why did I live in this culture where we value chastity, mercy, kindness? Like where did these values come from? Because they didn't come from Rome. And so as he tried to answer that question, he said, I had to realize that actually where these all came from is Christianity. And specifically from the crucifixion, he says, the fact that the Christian story centers on the violent suffering and death of Christ, and that the Christians said in that is where our salvation is found, was absolutely unintelligible to the Romans. That's why the book of Acts is so polarized, because the Roman world doesn't have a category for how someone who suffers violence at the hand of someone else is glorious. That's inglorious to the Romans. It's you don't suffer, you dominate your opponents, and that's how you show that you're glorious. And so he basically traces the whole history of Western culture. Again, it's written very engagingly. It's a book that's easy to read. But he traces out these values of humility, mercy, democracy, protest. He just takes all these values that we sort of take for granted in the West and say, hey, every one of these is the heritage of Christianity. And he does it in a way that says even the people who hate Christianity the most are standing on the foundation of Christianity in order to hate it. Like it's, and he does it in a way that he's not really writing as a theologian. He's writing as a popular author and basically saying like, hey, whether you think Christianity is true or not, if you're going to be honest about Western culture, you have to acknowledge that Christianity has changed the world. The way we think about life in the West is rooted in the heritage of Christianity.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
So the Tom Holland book in particular, Dominion, I've got it here in front of me. The version I have is, 600 pages. So it's a longer read. But for those of you that find yourself in conversations with people where that kind of knowledge would be helpful, where you find people critiquing Christianity or saying, hey, actually Christianity is the cause of ills and violence and stupidity in the world and we should do away with it, Holland is going to give you a lot of good raw material, because basically what he says is like, hey, if you're a liberal, if you're a feminist, if you're pro-abortion, if you're in favor of gay marriage, guess what? All of those things are standing on the heritage of Christianity. Because one of the points he makes is the value of the individual in Western culture, the way we're individualistic and we believe that individual people have value, that is from Christianity. Right. In Rome, the thing that had value was the state. You gave your life for Rome. You laid down your own preferences for the glory of the Roman nation. There was no such thing as an individual mattering until Christianity gave us that heritage. And so it's really fascinating. He basically just takes all the arguments that people want to have with you about the reasons why Christianity is bad. And he says, actually, you can't even say that except to acknowledge that you're standing on the foundation of a Christian worldview that has really shaped all of how the Western world works and operates and thinks. There's an interesting place where he even talks about like why something like the caste system in India couldn't ever gain traction in the West, you know, and why when Western missionaries went to places like China, they had a really hard time entering into that cultural world because they had certain assumptions that they took for granted. Like he talks about the astronomers that the Pope sent to China at the request of the Chinese emperor, because the Chinese were having trouble with navigating with their ships because their astronomy wasn't quite right. And at this point in the Enlightenment, Spain and Western Europe had figured out navigation because they understood astronomy. And so they had the right star charts. And so their ships had no problem with navigation. And the Chinese figured that out and said, hey, would you come teach our astronomers how to help us with this? And so these Western astronomers went from Spain, Roman Catholic world, to China. And what they realized is the reason we can't help these Chinese guys is because they think the world is a cycle and they don't believe that the heavens work according to fixed laws. They don't believe in science the way we believe in science in the West. And Holland says, why is that? It's because science in the West was the heritage of Christianity that taught that there was a God who created the world in an orderly way and that it could be known. The Chinese didn't have a category like that. And so they just, the reason their astronomy was wrong is because they didn't think the heavens, the movements of the stars and planets, followed a predictable pattern. And so he talked about how actually it wasn't astronomy they needed. It was like cultural dialogue of, and actually they basically kicked these astronomers back over to Spain and said like, yeah, we're done with you guys. We don't want your Christianity and your weird worldview. We just wanted help with our star charts. And so Holland makes this point of like, actually there's an example of how Christianity had implicitly given us a scientific heritage that even if you reject the theology of Christianity, you're still standing in this stream of science that operates by rules and laws and that is understandable. And that in itself is the heritage of Christianity.
Yeah, it's so fascinating when you think of the philosophical movements of the West and how they just live on the borrowed capital of Christianity. I mean, think even the Enlightenment, which elevated humanity to, we would say, unbiblical proportion, but it branched from a certain assumptions that were laid by Christianity. And so without Christianity, you don't have the ground, the soil for the Enlightenment. And so whatever good was in the Enlightenment, we can say, and whatever negative, but like, as you're pointing out, is it's the soil was Christian. Like, why didn't the Enlightenment happen in China or happen in the Middle East or in other places? Is because of what Christianity allowed.
Yeah. So it's a really interesting and fascinating take on things. And I found Tom Holland to just be an engaging author. I really liked reading him, both in Rubicon and in Dominion. I had never read any of his stuff before. But again, these are, you know, if you're the kind of person that likes just a nice thick book that's going to take a while to get through, but that will be fun to read, those are two good ones. So
all from a footnote.
Yeah, all from a footnote on a website. You know, this is why it's like, that's the kind of serendipitous stuff I like. It's like, man, I would have never read that book except I was on this geeky website. I was like, oh, this person says, they literally said, if you want to read one book on the Roman Republic, read this book. And I was like, well, I'll just take this person's word for it and go see what that, see if I can get that at the library. And here I am.
Here we are.
Why footnotes are beautiful. So thanks for letting me geek out a little bit, listeners. I read a lot of books on sabbatical, and I like talking about books. So thanks for this opportunity.
Maybe we should start a book podcast.
Yeah, it's like a, it could be like a sub pod. Actually, Walker and I were talking about this. Walker wants to do this podcast called Bob Reads Books, where he just like asks me questions about books and I talk about it. I was like, that would be amazing. I would love that.
That'd be fantastic.
I don't know who would listen to that podcast, but I would nerd
I think
out.
a lot of people
I
would.
Bet you get a lot
I would
of people.
Nerd out on that. So we'll see what happens.
If you're interested in listening to Bob Reads Books, send us an email, podcast@cdomaha.com. Seriously, the goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We always love to hear from you, the listener. So if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send us an email to podcast@cdomaha.com. And we'll see you again next Wednesday for another Wednesday conversation.